You're listening to Am I Cancelled?
So, put your headphones in, tune out the world, and get cancelled with us.
Welcome to episode 2 of Am I Cancelled? Very special guest today, Victoria Frazier, also sometimes known as Tori. She is a scholar. Look, she's got her BFA in a double major. What? Creative writing and psychology. You know, perhaps in this episode we're going to have to break in and get ourselves analyzed by a psychology major. Look, if you want to hire her for something, go ahead and go on over to victoriafraser.ca. Frazier spelled F-R-A-S-E-R. That's right. Follow her on Twitter at drunkukulele. Follow her on Instagram, drunk.ukulele. We went ahead and we sat down with Victoria to talk about just so many things. I mean, Dungeons and Dragons, why she likes that, why she likes snakes. I gave her a fun fact at one point. I played her a clip of Julie and I arguing and asked her to analyze it. Let's just jump in and see what happens right after the commercial break.
Do you want more Am I Cancelled? Well, so did we. Be sure to check out Am I Cancelled at youtube.com/AmICancelled. No spaces, put a question mark at the end. That's Am I Cancelled. And search us on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere you get your podcast.
Back to the show.
Tori, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
Hello. Excited to be here.
These first few questions may seem like an attack, but I promise they aren't.
I'm ready. Come at me.
I'm here today as a student of you, and I'm just looking to learn. With that disclaimer, I want to know why Dungeons and Dragons. But before you answer, let me explain the question.
Okay.
I'm not a person who thinks I'm too good for the game or that it's for nerds in a negative sense. But I personally look at games like that and Magic the Gathering and think, wow, there's so much to keep track of and it seems so time consuming and I just can't be bothered. So what is the attraction to D&D and being a dungeon master?
Great question. It's really a lot more mainstream than it used to be. I myself grew up like super into board games. So I have played God knows how many. So I love complicated, hard, strategic board games. So Dungeons & Dragons is not even the hardest thing I've ever played, quite frankly. But yeah, it's I think it's just the main RPG that a lot of people play to get into. Like, I haven't done a lot of them until I'd done Dungeons & Dragons. Now I played a couple. And I just played Magic for the first time. So that is also a lot. But I mean, there's so many types of board games. So for me, I like a variety of everything. Like, I like a good challenging game that takes me 2 or 3 hours. I'm eating snacks with my family, whatever. But I also like a good lighthearted micro game that I can play between, or just a party game that you can really only play when you're drunk, because otherwise everything else is too complicated. Exploding Kittens, for example, terrible game. Only good when people are drunk, because or when you're 12, I guess. No, even like 6, it's not a complicated game. But, oh gosh, here I am already bashing on something. Dungeons & Dragons, I really like it just because it's one of the biggest tabletop RPGs, and I play a lot of board games. It really kind of plays into the creative, like, storytelling elements, which a lot of good games have, and a lot of modern board games take Betrayal on the House of the Hill, for example, and like Dead of Winter. Like, a lot of good storytelling games, really those components come from games like Dungeons and Dragons that really push that forward, because otherwise you had board games like Monopoly. Like, there's not a lot of story there. That's incredibly boring. You're just trying to steal each other's money, like. So I think it's a very early fundamental board game that I kind of pushed the direction of a lot of other board games later on, and so I'd always wanted to play it. Never got to, finally did. And the community is like, honestly, it's almost like it's kind of turned into a thing. Like, my ex, when I first met him, he only played Catan. And so when I meet people who only play D&D, I'm like, okay, but like, there's a lot of other things. Like, but oh well. that always happens, you know, diehard fans of anything. It's one of many games that I play. But yeah, I've always been into that.
Is it always fun or does it ever feel like a job?
I mean, as the DM, it's definitely like a lot more work. I've done a lot of work to make it less work. I have so many like prepared tables and things that I don't have. So I can like, and also there's a lot of things on the internet that are free actually, like a lot of generators that you can just go to a website and be like, I need a name of a town. I'm like, Slurvy McDumpville. Okay, perfect. Cause this is a town that its main export is trash. Like whatever. You can like pop in things and generate a thing instantly. It can be long, but it can also be short. Like I've done a couple campaigns, but then I never really get to finish them because that's the inevitable thing is getting a group of like 4 to 6 people together regularly for like 6 months. Good luck. That's not going to last forever. It's like maybe 2 months taps. So I've started a lot of campaigns that never really got to finish. I like a micro session a one-shot session where it's just kind of like, we're going to meet today for like 2 hours and play a game. Trouble is that the character always takes like an hour to make. So you want to like ideally play with people who've already done that. Otherwise, then, you know.
You know, when I play video games, I always just skip that part. It's always just default. Let's get to the game.
Oh my God, me too. I'm just like, I want to play the game. I hate all this pre stuff. My one friend's like forcing me to play Final Fantasy 15 with him. And I'm just like, okay. But it took me like, actually the second time it was a lot faster because I played it once before. But it took me way too long to make character. And also the leveling up. I just want to be level 10 already. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to stab ladybugs. Like, let me get to it.
Moving on to the second question that is not an attack, but you have a pet snake named Lexicon. There's no soft fur to pet, so my question is why?
Why? I love snakes. So when I was 11, the first time I ever held a snake, I was in my Girl Guide group, actually, and there was a company called Cinema Zoo. They, like, Vancouver has a very large film scene. Mm-hmm. As actually one of my like other jobs that I do as well.
I know.
But yeah, of course you do. I'm not, why did I even tell you? But yeah, no. So there's a company that, one of the big companies that supply, and I don't know if it's around anymore, but they used to supply all the animals, like exotic animals for films. And so they came to my Girl Guide group for some reason. And they I held like a giant boa constrictor. I was like 11. This thing could have killed me.
Oh my goodness.
Luckily it didn't. But because they could like, they're not strong enough, depending on the snake. I think it was younger, so I don't think it definitely couldn't kill an adult human, but like it maybe could have like suffocated me. Luckily, right. It didn't. Again, I surprisingly was not traumatized by that experience. I was like surprised by how soft and smooth it was. The boa had a very different kind of skin than she does. Like, she's more kind of glossy and smooth. Mm-hmm. Her underbelly is soft, so I will argue there is a soft part of a snake, and also booping her little nose is great. And she gives you kisses when she, like, explores and, like, wraps herself around you. Oh, my God. Her little tongue flicks, tickle. It's great. I love it.
So this is fun. So this next question is impossible to answer, most likely. I've met a lot of psychology majors, and they all seem to be a little bit quirky and speak very quickly, which I love. And as a very open-ended, impossible-to-answer question, I'd like to know why you think that is.
You know, it's so funny because I had the opposite experience where there's like one other person I can think of that I met in my psychology like degree, like as a student, like fellow student, not my professors, who was like interesting and quirky and like, I wish that we had the same birthday and everything. Shout out to Katya, who's never going to listen to this. Just kidding. Now I have to send it to her. But she's cool. But a lot of my like classmates were honestly very boring. And they were like choosing psychology because they didn't know what degree to pick. Because it is the largest faculty mm-hmm. on campus. A lot of people are like, I'm going to pick something useful. It's going to be psychology. I kind of also did that. Creative writing was my main choice. And then I was like, I need like another plan. And then I was torn between anthropology and psychology, or also potentially biology, but science and arts don't mix together very well. Right. So I went for psychology.
I guess what the person I'm thinking of is a professor that's like really, really respected on my campus and has her doctorate in psychology mm-hmm. and is yeah. awesome and quirky. And she's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, my professors were all mostly pretty interesting and pretty quirky. Like, I did a sexuality class, which that guy was, like, super interesting. He took us on a field trip to a sex store for school. Like, that was that was really fun. And then we all got discounts, and it was like, oh, I don't need anything. Like, oh, this is so sad.
What is happening over there?
I Anyway, then I also had a professor in child psychology. She was great. She was also awesome. She made us introduce ourselves in a 300 person lecture hall. Literally all 300 people said their name and their major and how they were. I was like, what?
I hate classes that start like that, though. It's so corny.
I mean, it was, but also for psychology, because it's such a large discipline, right. It's way harder to make friends. Like, people don't talk to each other, and you're in a group, and then your group sucks.
I do want to talk about your college experience, and when you first started attending UBC, was it hard to make friends?
It super was. I'm the most, like, one of the most extroverted people, and yet I still found it difficult, just because you're in such a sea of people, and, like, some people come in, they, like, live together in dorms, so I went to Kwantlen, is a small university, for my first year, which was near my house, which had people from my high school in it. And I made some friends there, but it was also because it's a smaller university. A lot of people kind of go not even knowing if they're going to complete the degree or not even knowing what they're going to do. They do general studies and stuff. And I very much was like, I'm doing creative writing for sure. And then the psychology ended up being the second choice as well. But I then transferred to UBC in my second year. And my high school grades were not very good. I did not do well in that environment. So I would never have gotten into UBC from the get-go.
Very relatable.
So I think because I transferred, I didn't really live in a dorm. I am just generally a busy person because I do a lot of hobbies, as you can tell. So I didn't make as many university friends as I think some people did. I still have some. I definitely do. But I do kind of regret that I didn't go to more events to socialize and stuff. Especially with my creative writing major, I had a small class, and I do have a lot of friends-ish, acquaintances, but very few that I kept in touch with.
Well, we should say shout out to Lillian May for encouraging discussions, right?
She's great. Oh my gosh. I love her.
You were in a slam poetry club where you were the treasurer in your fourth year. The Psychology Student Association, EDRG Research Lab, and the War Gamers Board Game Club. And seeing as you participated so heavily within your college, what were the positives and negatives of being so involved?
It definitely gave me less downtime. I was doing two jobs. I actually started university, and the first person I met was like, don't work and go to school, or do a part-time job and go to school. Don't do it all, right? In my fourth year, I did it all, which I tried not to do. I did so good until that last year, because I was like, now it's almost over. I'm just going to do everything. So I had two jobs. I was doing full-time school, and I was the treasurer organizing that club. The other ones, I was also in the swing dancing club, but those were kind of drop-in events that I would go to. I didn't get heavily, heavily involved in them. I guess I did work. I also volunteered in the research lab. I forgot about that, but I think that was the year before. Yeah, you do too much, and then you kind of burn yourself out a little bit. Luckily, I only did it in the last year. I had to quit one of the jobs. But yeah, it's good. I mean, and I made friends actually through a lot of those other activities, which was good. I guess I don't really, it's funny, the people I worked with, I didn't consider university friends, and yet I met them in university, but we didn't go to classes together. That's weird. I guess I do have more university friends than I thought.
Well, there you go. That's good, though. So yeah. After you graduated, you had a plethora of jobs not exactly related to your major. So explain the process of trying to find a job associated with your degree, or did you expect it to be easier?
Yeah, I definitely had no idea what I was going to do with it. I had ideas on people always kind of talk. Everyone thinks about jobs in the most literal sense, oh, I got a writing degree, I'm going to go be a published author. You're like, cool, but not going to happen. not likely to happen. I shouldn't say not going to happen. It's just incredibly unlikely. Even with working in a literary journal or doing some kind of writing thing related to that, a lot of those kind of start off as underpaid or unpaid internship type things. And so all the kind of jobs you think of immediately, which is what, and what people come to your class and kind of tell you that they do, oh, I'm an author, whatever. They don't really, they did give some advice. I think there was a class on what to do with your degree afterwards. Mm-hmm. But I didn't ever really learn about writing for the internet until very recently. Even writing for advertising. These are all things that the creative writing is super related to. It's just not creative in the sense of writing a poem, right, or a piece of fiction.
Or an article.
Yeah, even an article still can be very creative. So yeah, they feel like the reason it kind of took me so long to sort of find a job that was related was that I didn't go to the class that had the best resources for me to know. I know that there are resources at UBC and places I think there's UBC Careers. Actually, some person reached out to me on LinkedIn. She was a student at UBC, and she was like, hey, I want to have your job one day. Someone at UBC told me to talk to you. And I was like, how? What? what resources did you get? I didn't get that. Like, someone, I don't know who it is, but I mean, cool. I said hi for her, to her for a bit, but then she, I told her that she had wanted to ask questions, but then she kind of ghosted me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Was it kind of difficult to find a job related to
your degree? It was.
And it's really important, you know, while you're in college to get experience while you're still in college. That's exactly. a huge thing too.
A lot of my experience that I did during university, like the research lab job, volunteer work actually, was super important. And that helped me get my first office job. And I think that kind of, and thus being the treasurer of the club, I think we focus so much on like the learning, and like that's important, but you still should have some practical skills. And I've always liked to do things, and I always like, every time I see a job, like ad anywhere, I'm like, I could do that, even though it was totally unrelated. Like I saw one for like a printing press kind of thing, and I was like, ooh, I'd like to print things. But I, you know, I have to stop myself.
You know, my first work study job was in a print center. So that's interesting.
I thought it sounded interesting.
My next thing is more of a statement that I want to make to you. I know from reading that you were very excited about the prospect of becoming a 911 operator. You were offered the job, began training for it, and unfortunately you scored below average in low range for the hearing test. And you tried to power through and continue your training, but you had to make the tough moral decision to resign. You decided that in that position, you were holding people's lives in your hands and couldn't really risk making a mistake. And now the way that you write about it, you think that's an embarrassing story, but I personally think it was pretty noble of you to make that decision. And in the end, it pushed you into doing what you loved, a more creative career where you can express yourself through writing and consulting. And plus, you now work for yourself. So I just wanted to make that statement to you.
Well, thank you.
No problem. I
did write that story, and I do feel it was really hard to tell people about, like, once I had been so excited to get it, and then it was only 2-3 months tops, I think. Right. And so for such a quick kind of downfall, I know that it's not that embarrassing. And again, it did lead to a totally different shift in my life, but it's like, we just don't talk about those kinds of things. I feel like, in person, I'm very like, I will talk about anything, and I don't really care about boundaries. And I'm very open and honest, just generally as a person. But I think social media, it's really hard to break that barrier down and to do it. And I try for my own social media. Like, I don't post the perfect pictures, but I post the worst pictures all the time. But you know, it's just, that's what I am. And I think I like to make sure that I can add that into the world, so that I think we aren't quite so, not everything's picture perfect. I just really value that.
Yeah, you seem like one of those people who want to highlight that, you know, not everything's perfect. Not everything needs to be face-tuned or Photoshopped. Like, there can be imperfections in the world.
No, I like, look at these beautiful freckles. Oh my God, if I used those filters, I'd lose them.
Exactly. You're a content writer for SocioMix and a creative copywriter in general. Where else can people find your work or even hire you?
Yeah, so my website's probably the best way to start. VictoriaFraser.ca. Hair flip. So I am doing an internship with that company. It's based in India, and they are like a fashion kind of company that's kind of moving into more content writing. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning. They're kind of training me on SEO, and then I'm going to be writing articles for them. Phone call with him tomorrow, so that'll be fun. I also work for like a marketing company in Toronto, one of my freelance clients as well, and I do like blog newsletters with him. So I've done like tons of different things. I also just like learning and trying new things. I did a podcast, so like I know lots of social media and things like that, and like it's mostly self-taught. Like, this isn't stuff that I got in my degree. I kind of wish I'd done a little bit of marketing or something, but
you're learning as you go.
Exactly. So yeah, my website, I would say start there. And then I'm my own person business thing. So
yeah,
I write a contract and then we decide how to work together. That's probably how that would go.
So I just want to say that I found your fun audition video to be a Philly cream cheese angel.
I was like a random side project that I just did in 1 week. I wanted so bad for it to happen.
I just want to say that it was perfection. And speaking of visual mediums, you work on movies. So what sort of work do you do for that?
Right now, I just started doing PA work, which stands for production assistant. It can kind of lead into director. So if I got into I think it's called the DGC. Yeah, the Directors Guild of Canada. Mm-hmm. Which I'm considering going and doing a bunch of that just for the benefits. Health benefits are nice.
I saw a picture of you very muddy. So what happened there?
Yes, I posted a picture where I was covered in mud on Facebook not too long ago. So with the production assistant PA work, you're doing a lot of like so my team specifically is there are people who do that on set PA stuff. I haven't done that yet. I'm just doing locations right now and like prep work. So I, you know, go to the motel that we're going to record at and, you know, help clean it out and move all the furniture. I don't really do set deck. Set deck's people who do like put the things in the set. There's a lot of different departments in film. I didn't even understand until like I started working in how like different it is. So I'm like, I'm telling you, I'm moving furniture, totally not related to the set. I'm literally just moving furniture out of the room and that kind of stuff. And then we did get to pick. I did actually get to kind of do set deck because I got to pick which side tables they were going to use. And I picked the ugliest ones, but they wanted a shitty motel. So I was worried that it was like, maybe I should pick the nicer ones. But then they ended up liking my decision because like, no, wait, we want ugly.
Your life anyways. It's so interesting because I almost want your, or I do want your life because everything you do is like creative based. And so I worked at warehouse jobs for like a decade. And I was like, I hated it, hated every second of it. And that's why I decided to go back to school and try to do something with radio. And and I just want it. And can I give you a fun fact?
Okay.
So just to be clear, when you want to Google, or when you want Google to search for the exact words you type, you put quotes around the words. And so the fun fact is if you put...
I'm scared.
if you put quotes around your name, a lot of porn titles pop up.
Oh, no.
And as a researcher, I have to click to see what's going on because we'd be having a completely different conversation right now.
Oh, man. If I was secretly a porn star, it would be so much more fun.
And it's all just weird links to like fake dating and hookup sites. So I thought you would like to know that.
I am honored. I'm so glad. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
It was fine. I mean, I thought I had an inside scoop. I thought I was going to break some news here.
But, if that happened at the very end, you had me shocked. I didn't even know. If that was the case, I would be like,
how did that happen? It was weird.
I think I would use an alias. Let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. But that's also my segue into talking about your dating life. Sure. So... you go by a few different names, and apparently you dated a guy for 3 months without him ever knowing your real name. How does that happen?
So my name is Victoria, but I also go by Tori. I think in the podcast that I first started with my friend Allie, we did Allie and Tori because like it sounds good together. And also she called me Tori. We've known each other since elementary school. Right. So it's been my nickname for a long time. And then in my adult life, I kind of switch between both. Like my close friends still will be like, oh, so-and-so called you Tori. They almost pass it on to each other because I introduced myself as Victoria, but then, you know.
Right. Like, I got confused.
Right. I know. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I used to be able to know when someone knew me because I could be like, okay, I was Tori from like age like 11 to like 16. And then I was Victoria again. Right. And then I also had pink hair at one point. So if someone knew me, you didn't stalk me that hard then, clearly. Anyways, now it's all a mess, so it doesn't really matter. But I go by Victoria and Tori. My middle name's Angeline, which I've started sometimes using just for, I'm thinking of using it more for artsy things or like, I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure about that. And I also always love my middle name and like reading a lot of things on the internet where like people, I'm not like I don't like the name Victoria. I like it. But you know, why not just have another one? It'd be fun, right? But yeah, no, going back to the guy that I dated for 3 months. Yeah, he had met all my friends calling me Tori. I was like 16 or 17. And he didn't realize until we were like 3 months of dating. And I guess somehow my name came up by someone else finally. And then he was like, Victoria? Tori's short for Victoria?
3 months, though.
Yeah. I mean, I was 16. We hung out like once a week.
All right. Okay. I get that now. But
like 12 dates.
Let's go back. Let's go to 2020 with COVID dating, if you're involved in that. So I want to know, what is the dating scene like for Tori? Are you disinterested? Is it going well? How does a person darken Tori's romantic doorway?
Darken my romantic doorway. That's a good way of phrasing it. I did do... I was dating, I had a partner for like 5 years. We broke up about a year ago and immediately actually started dating someone then for like 6 months, streaming boy, big nerd, who then moved back to his country in Ireland. Oh. And then since then, I've just kind of been going on random dates and then you go to COVID. It's like COVID happens. And you're like, I'm socially distant from you, but now we're going to go sit outside in a patio. It's like kind of weird. Yeah. Yeah, I always can't get past like a third date. when I hate online dating. It's just not the way I meet people. I generally meet people too. So I've used it here and there, but I don't really like it. I don't know. I feel like it's almost like you get to learn too much about a person for one thing. So I'm like, I want to tell you my crazy stories. I don't want you to read my crazy story in some blurb or like, I don't know. Right. It's just weird. Or like someone can be like making a decision on something, like just cause I wrote Scorpio on my profile, they think that I actually care about that. Like, no, I really don't. And then they're like, but you're not a Scorpio. Cause you're not crazy. And I'm like, I'm like a triple Scorpio, like going by all the star signs. Apparently, like I checked just to get people off my back. I've like doubled down on the Scorpio, but yet I'm not that aggressive, which is surprising to people, at least people who do astrology.
So I also want to bring up the podcast you do with Allie, where you discuss a myriad of topics and have many different guest interviews. It's called I Like Your Dress, and it is wonderful. I found it interesting to discover that you didn't think you would like podcasts in the beginning. You didn't used to listen to them and thought people talking sounded boring in general. And it wasn't until you took a podcast class in college that you changed your mind on the matter. And explain how that class changed your outlook.
Yeah, I really, really didn't think I was going to like podcasts. I think vaguely knew about them probably like 10 years ago. One of my close friends really liked it, but I didn't listen to any. Like, I didn't understand what it was at all. So I didn't even, it was so far away from me that I was like, huh, random tech thing. Like, I don't know. I had no idea. My ex, who I dated for years, he loved sports radio. So I just don't like sports. So I just hated everything to do with radio.
By the way, yeah, I heard you talking about that on other podcasts. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awful to me too. So,
oh God, I know. I'm like, please stop. I'm so not interested. But we had to fight over when I got my own car, I was like, you're in my car. We're never listening to that again. Like, it was great. I had a bit of a power trip there. But, you know, yeah, no. So I did that class, and that was my first like actual introduction, and I was like, oh no, I'm taking this class, I don't know anything about podcasts. So I had to like start researching them, and I just literally just googled like the top podcasts like three years ago, I guess it was. And so I started listening to a lot of the stereotypical ones, like My Murder, Serial, Spirits. These are all like very well-known ones, but even then, people still, there's so many that like everyone listens to totally different things, and like,
yeah, I know,
it blows my mind. It was just kind of awesome about it. But yeah, so that class, I focused on scripting and like more so radio plays, because again, it was like kind of creative. Some people did do, I think one person tried to do, well, so there was also some people who did like research, kind of like journalism type one classes. I wrote like a fantasy child's adventure story with like two kids, two elves going, like kind of playing with the stereotypes of fantasy where they go into a cave and then blah, blah, blah. It ends up being like an old granny instead of an old dragon. Spoiler alert. Oh no, I spoiled the thing that doesn't exist. Sorry.
I mean, it makes sense that would lead to Dungeons and Dragons, though. Or did that come afterwards?
Oh yeah, I always liked reading fantasy books as a kid. But yeah, so I did that course, and it was good because it taught me a bit about script writing, which I didn't get to. I didn't really do any of the script writing classes because those were, the people who did script writing for this creative writing degree like really like script writing, and they do like all the classes. They kind of get full just because it's like a very different medium. And I did mostly like comics, poetry, fiction. And so, yeah, it was nice because it was one of the only classes I got to do script writing in. And I like doing that. I struggle immensely with fiction. I am so bad at writing in prose. I prefer, like, I like the dialogue, which is why script writing is okay. But I don't like, I don't like description. I do and I don't. I can do it. I just don't think I'm good at it.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of scripted podcasts. I don't really like the murder mystery or crime podcast. I've always been into talk radio. So that transfers to, I kind of want to hear, it's almost like you said with when you take pictures and you're okay with imperfections. It's like, I'm okay with maybe there's a little blankness here, or there's dead air, or someone flubs a word or something. So it's just the perfect, which is weird because with these interviews, I am like heavily editing them just to, because, you know, I don't want a guest to feel like they messed up or anything. Yeah. So it's like, let's just make everything perfect. But regular shows, if I'm just talking about topical things, it's whatever. If there's a little silence here and there, I'm not gonna fix it, because what I'm practicing for is to do talk radio. So
yeah. Oh, that's fair. And yeah, there's totally within podcasting. That's exactly it. There's interview shows. There's like heavily researched information documentary type shows. Like I love Science Versus, and like lots of other educational ones. There's again, audio dramas, which is what I mostly, that's just what the class kind of focused on. Cause that's what my professor did himself.
Right.
And I don't listen to a lot of them there, but there are some good ones. There's definitely, I've tried listening to some, and then if they're not, if it's like bad acting, just terrible, but like, you know, it can be more difficult to get into for sure. I think it's a really good medium though. I think I would really hope, cause I know actually Netflix has been taking, there is some podcasts, I don't know which one it was, but Netflix did make a show or was making a show based on a podcast, like an audio drama. So I think it's a really good way to get, more representation in our media, even if we can start with like a podcast that does really well. That's either like some crazy fantasy thing, which, cause like, think about it, like radio, you don't have the same expenses. Like I could make a whole crazy fantasy world. I can paint you a picture of this like giant steampunk balloon with all these doodads and dippity bops, whatever.
Right.
And like describe that to you. And I don't have to make it. I don't have to paint it. I don't even have to draw it. Like that's why, like Rick and Morty is a great sci-fi show because it's an animation. So like, you know, you can do all these crazy fun things that you don't have to like do in CGI that cost you money or like make props that are really expensive. So I think radio is also a really open medium. Like it's funny because you think it's limited because you only have audio, but it actually gives you more space to create things visually with your words. Right,
right. Theater of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I saved this for last because it would have derailed the entire interview otherwise. I would like to give you a chance to flex your psychology muscles right now. So if you don't mind, I'd like to play you a clip and get your psychological opinion on it afterwards.
Okay.
So let me set it up so it makes sense.
I'm so scared.
My former co-host, this is on me. You don't have to be scared. This is all going to be me embarrassing myself. So
okay.
My former co-host told me that she wasn't attracted to me. Completely unprovoked.
Okay. And, in the middle of the show?
No, it wasn't during a show, but it did spark about 3 episodes of us arguing about it. But so I was in a Zoom call with her and other friends discussing the changes that would happen to the podcast. One point, her and another girl were joking around, talking about hooking up, haha. I decided I would say that I would hook up with the other guy that was in the room. And she said, ew, I don't want to see that. I said, why? That's sexist, meaning not wanting to see two guys hooking up. It was sexist, not, hey, why don't you want to see me doing something, right? And she became straight-faced and cold, saying, because I'm not attracted to you. And
oh, no.
What resulted after that, like I said, was 2 or 3 episodes of me talking about it. And the clip pulled here is an argument that took place between us. And let me just say that this is edited for time. So it's about 3 minutes still. But this is a part of like a hour-long argument.
Oh, no.
So this is just little pieces. And I'm going to play it for you now and then get your opinion on it afterwards. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right.
There was no reason for you to be so mean. And the fact that you're still, to this very second, acting like you didn't say something wrong proves that you have no soul, you are the devil, and someone needs to put a stop to the detriment you put on this society.
I'm not...
That'd be me.
It's something that you can take offense to, but I'm not saying that telling somebody that you're not attracted to them is a mean thing to say. Because I remember asking you, was like, did you want me to lie to you? And you said yes, and I said no.
Yeah, if you're going to talk about my looks, I would rather you lie to me. But I wasn't saying that you are not attractive in general.
I was saying that I am not personally attracted to you.
Because you keep trying to qualify. You keep trying to like give yourself an out by saying, well, I didn't say you're not attractive. I just said I'm not attractive to you. But yeah. That's how you sound to me.
That doesn't mean that I don't think that somebody else could find you unattractive and I'd be like, whoa, why do you find that person attractive? Because I know that people have a different taste than me.
So what you're saying is you're a whore.
What?
So okay.
I don't get how you got that from that.
I just wanted to insult you. Okay. You're upsetting me. What you're saying is still insulting when you explain it. Because you're saying, no, I don't think you're attractive, but I think other people could possibly... Of course, Julie. Of course other people could find me attractive.
That's how life works.
No fucking duh.
Stating the obvious. That's how shit works.
But you were calling me ugly. And this is what you won't admit. That's exactly what you were doing. You were saying, you are ugly. I don't want to see you fuck anybody. I don't want to see you naked. You're a piece of shit.
Because I don't.
Go die. That's fine. That's fine. What I'm saying is keep the shit to yourself. There's no reason to say it. And there's no reason to say it so cold and mean for no fucking reason.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, what I said in itself is not necessarily the meanest thing to say. It was a thought that popped into my head that came out of my mouth that shouldn't have come out of my mouth.
That's the first time you admitted it shouldn't have came out of your mouth, but okay.
No, it is the first time, not the first time, because I said that I shouldn't have said it like that.
Shouldn't have said it like that. Because
I could have said it. I could have said it in a different way, in a different manner that you wouldn't have been offended by.
Say it to me in an offensive way.
I don't know. I probably could have said something better in the
moment. You actually could have just left it at, I don't want to see that. You could have just said that again, and it probably would have passed over.
But, like, would you not have insinuated my meaning behind it?
I literally didn't expect you to say those words to me, because I wouldn't say them to you.
Like, if you, like, that's what I was trying to explain to you. And I get that everybody feels differently about different things, but I was saying that, like, if you had said that to me, it would have just been that, you know.
You don't have a fucking soul, Julie. Yeah, of course you wouldn't have cared. You didn't care that I was upset.
People have to deal with that all the time.
You didn't care that I was upset about what you said, and I don't think you ever were, and I don't think you are now. You don't give a shit that I'm upset about it, and you didn't give a shit that I was upset about it then.
So that's a small, awkward part of an hour-long argument.
So
I want to know what you think about that. What can you give me some psychological advice on how that could have been handled better?
You need help unpacking it. Well, I don't know where to start. Okay. Well, I definitely, the whole, like, she's making the joke that you're not allowed to make is definitely somewhat unfair there. I could see that she's like we definitely have, society definitely prefers, like, females, like, going on with the queerness and stuff like that. Women hooking up are like, cool, great, two ladies making out in public. But then when it's two guys, like, somehow there's, like, a disconnect there. That's definitely, like, a bit of a stereotype. Like, Brokeback Mountain being, like, so, like, actually...
Well, she was more saying, no, I was saying it. See, she misconstrued what I was saying. Oh, you think so?
I think it was like, I think that, because that's her initial disgust. Like, I know exactly. Well, okay. So we'll start with this. In my psychology class, I learned about reaction formation, which is the tendency to be hyper against something that you actually have in yourself, essentially. So, for example, you have those pastors who are gay, who are super homophobic. And I know that because I grew up in, like, a more conservative upbringing, and I was relatively homophobic, like, not angry or aggressive. I just thought, like, my instinct reaction that I had been taught was to say, ew, disgusting. Like, I would never kiss a woman.
This is
very
such
wrong
an interesting
now, but
now.
At the time I didn't know that. Anyway, so I think, like, the instant, and maybe not, that's not what going on exactly with her in that moment, but, like, that's society's reaction of, like, the instant disgust of, like, to, like, whatever, like, a little bit of homophobia, just, like, as an inherent basic reaction that we've just kind of been taught. My, like, six-year-old that I was, like, taking care of once said, like, this terrible thing that was, like, boys and girls could never, like, kiss. That's gross. And I was, like, you're six. You can't know that unless someone told you. That's terrible. So, like, that's just the thing that we kind of have been taught that is a baseless construct, right? We know in nature that homosexuality is completely normal and natural. In ourselves and our own societies and in, oh my gosh, like, every animal ever. So I think that's one thing. So a little bit of that at the beginning was what I caught. And then going on to the physical attractiveness, I did a whole degree in psychology and I did do some courses on human sexuality. And yes, physical attractiveness is definitely one aspect, but, you know, personality is a bigger, a much more important component than we think. And, like, you know, you want, like, a nice symmetrical face and, like, whatever, like, there's a lot of indicators of health, but that's just one aspect, like, for sure, personality. And I think maybe the tone that she was kind of getting to at the end there, I like the tone in which you've delivered, like, is like, oh, because you're gross and you're ugly and I would never want to see that. Like, that is kind of hurtful as opposed to, like, I'm your friend and I just don't want to see you having sex with someone. Like, that's more of a, don't feel like that's a boundary I'd like to cross. Like, that is a fair critique,
right?
As opposed to
the whole thing was, though, you know, I felt then, I don't really care now, but I felt then, like, why would you even say that? Like, there wasn't even a reason to say that in general. So it comes to this argument, and what ends up happening is actually we had, like, a whole night argument over Snapchat, and it ended up where it was just, her responses were so robotic and so, like, nothing, that it just it kept annoying me that she wasn't she wasn't really remorseful, and she wasn't really sorry for what happened, and she just continued saying. At one point that you didn't hear, she says something to the effect of, I can't force myself to feel sorry for something, or I can't force myself to feel empathy, or something like that. It was like,
to be a robot.
It's like, nice.
That's strange.
But you are giving like an interesting perspective on it that no one has said so far. Most people, well.
Which part?
The possible homophobia happening.
I mean, that's what it sounds like to me, which is fine. Like, that's
it's very
like,
interesting.
By default, like, I was there, and it took me a lot of time and growth to get over some of those things. But yeah, like, there's that in the that instinctual reaction. So maybe not meaning to lash out at you, but lashing out at that act or whatever is kind of what I would suspect was the main instigator thing. And then, of course, how you handled the situation afterwards is a whole different problem. Oh gosh. Like, I don't know, like arguing and being like, if I was her, I'd just be like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say these words in that negative way. And I would just move on. I have offended friends.
That would have been fine. Like, that would have been great.
And I think, people need to admit, like, you know what? I was wrong. You're right. Maybe I'm not wrong. Like, sure, I'm right in that I'm not attracted to you because, like, there's no debate there. I was mean in my delivery, and I'm sorry, and I will just stop. I will drop it. That's the other thing. It's like, you drop it, and you move on. Like, I hate people who just bring things up recurringly. I'm like, this is over. Like, why are you
I kept bringing it up because, in my mind, there was no closure to it. So I kept bringing it up. The way that she apologized was, like, one of the most annoying things. It's the worst way you can apologize. It was something like, I'm sorry if your feelings were hurt or something. One of those those sentences.
That, my friends, is called gaslighting. Yes. So, you know.
I'm sorry if you feel that way. Or
I'm sorry that you were hurt by what I said. I'm not sorry that I said it.
Right.
My friend Nora does that all the time. She and I were talking about something similar. But with this, I had an argument with my roommates like months ago. And I was telling her, I was like, they didn't apologize. They just said they were sorry that I felt my way. And she's like, oh, I do that all the time. I'm like, She's like, I do that when I don't want to apologize to someone.
That's what I said. Oh man, if we had more time, I would just play the entire argument. It's like, it's literally like 50 minutes long, and it's just, you know, I started saying like, this is just going to be a little segment of this episode, like, and she knew it was coming too, but I was like, this is just going to be a little segment, and I tried to jump into other things in the beginning, and it was just like around 15 minutes in, I'm like, you know what? No, we're gonna have this conversation. It literally lasted for way too long. But part of it was also content, to be honest. Like, by the time the episode had been was being recorded, I was like pretty much over it, and it didn't matter. But also, the argument was fun to have.
I mean, if you like, I also do like debating. So if you're into that, and you're just like, let's have a fun friend discussion. Like, whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't that like though. That's.
Sounds like I went a little bit too far. I've definitely had those debates with some of my friends of mine and people. I can't go on the internet. I can't comment on anything, or else I still do though, which is the problem.
Right. But
okay, this is a hilarious tangent. I got called a Karen for the first time in my life.
Ooh.
So I think I get a badge or a sticker, right? Or like, do I get a new haircut? I don't know. I got
to
celebrate.
For sure, you got to get a new haircut, and I think you have to get a new wardrobe.
Absolutely. And like a little tiny purse dog.
Mm-hmm. And you have to constantly ask for the manager, of course.
Yes. And then I have to kick the dog when it won't do the thing that I need it to do.
Yeah.
Terrible. No. So I got called Karen. It was great. What happened was there was this ad on Facebook. This guy was posting a thing in like a Craigslist kind of group that was like, the man fork. Your man needs a bigger fork because he's a man and he needs more food in his mouth. And I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
What does
and hilarious.
That mean?
I know, it's just a giant fork. It's a novelty gag gift. It's a joke, you know? I commented on it because I thought it was hilarious. And so did the guy who posted it. I was like, does this come in a smaller size for women? I don't think my hands can hold a male fork. I have dainty fingers. Thank you so much. And like, let me know if there is a lady fork, something like that. It was very clearly sarcasm. Like, who would say that, you know?
That's the problem with text, though, is that feelings are so hard to read through text.
I do suppose, yes. But in this case, the guy who posted the call, he responded immediately. And it was like, oh, no, we don't have any lady forks. I'm so sorry. But here's a baby fork. Like, send a picture of a little, like, plastic fork.
Yeah.
And this other woman was also like, when will we have gender equality unless we also have female forks? And it, again, this whole thing just spiraled into this dumb like comment thread of us goofing off. Clearly, right. Everyone was in on it. And then these two dudes the next day, I didn't see these comments until later, were like, ugh, you're ruining everything. Jeez, do you really need this? You're
ruining everything.
Go get your own fork, Karen, and like stuff like that. And I was like, wow, you guys have no idea. And I was like, I shouldn't have commented back. I should just let them think I was dumb. But instead, I was like, can't go crack a joke these days. I'm sorry, my sarcasm flew over your heads. And then, people, then they were even more offended.
People ruin trends that way. You see the video where it's Karen videos and people freaking out. The person who says like, oh, okay, Karen, that just ruins it. That puts you basically on the same level as them.
Right, so exactly. It's like, we're like, okay, boomer. It's like,
yeah. It's like, cringe. Absolute cringe.
Yeah.
So, are you planning on being on I Like Your Dress anytime soon?
So, she's doing season 3 without me for now. I think I was in the first episode, and she's just interviewing people. Mm-hmm. Instead of, we had like a different format before. I'm still involved, so like I'll do like some social media posts and like help her with her like questions for the interviews, and like not like heavy scripting, but you know, just like research kind of things. So behind the scenes, general production type things.
Do you still do the editing?
I don't do the editing anymore. She just started doing that, actually. So I'm very proud of her, because
I heard that she did not like to do the editing.
She had a lot of difficulty, but I'm so proud. She's learned so much. She would call me and be like, Tori, it's not working. The microphone is broken. And I'd be like, it's okay. We're going to figure it out. And so many times, she now knows all these different things, but something simple. And that happens to me too. Like the USB is just like 90% plugged in, but that one 10% is like not working. Right. We had one episode where it got ruined, unfortunately. I don't know what happened there. But yeah, learning more about the mixers and stuff as well, and other things. Trying to expand my knowledge and my experience. But she's doing the auto editing now. We'll see how season 4 comes. Maybe I was thinking of talking to her and like potentially coming back. I'm always welcome back. Like, we made it together. Like, we're not, right. I'm not like formally detached from it or anything. But yeah, I'm hoping to have audio editing and like doing various things for a couple other shows right now.
Right. When's Board Game Bitch coming out?
And I'm launching a new show, which I was about to say, which of course you knew about, called Board Game Bitch, which I'm so excited for. I'm excited. That was one of my first podcast ideas ever. It was like, I want to do a show where I review board games and I talk about strategies.
I heard December release?
December, Christmas Day. Oh, is the day.
Okay.
Actually, apparently Christmas Day. My network, I was talking to the people on my podcast network, and I actually placed a bet with one of the other hosts of a different show, Xanthia, who hosts Cave Goblin Network. Oh, sorry. No. That's the network. She hosts Cave Goblin Radio on the Cave Goblin Network. Anyway, right. She's launching some show right now. I have to actually ask her because I don't know what it is. But anyway, we were seeing who would finish their audio editing first. I had so much to do this month. I did not get around to it. I owe her a beer. But yeah, so Board Game Bitch is going to be coming out Christmas Day. I mean, I believe that's the date, but we'll see. So literally like 23 days countdown. And I have like 2 episodes ready. So I need to get the other 3. I think they'll be going with the network. We have like, that'll be the special access first, and then it'll go out eventually. I don't know when afterwards, but maybe like a month or a couple months later. I haven't done a Revolver show before with them, so this is my first one where it'll be on the network. I'll be promoting it, so you will have to sign up for their Patreon type thing, I think. But eventually it will later on also still be available for everyone, but just for the pre-launch, basically.
You should definitely, number one, you should definitely come back to promote it again. And number two... Where are you finding all these podcast networks? I don't know this aspect of podcasting. Yet.
So for me, for us, I got really into Twitter. And now I hated Twitter. God, I really didn't want to be on Twitter. I resisted it since the beginning. And then like 2 years ago with the podcast, I was like, oh, a lot of podcasters use Twitter.
Right.
A lot of people on Twitter look for recommendations. It's just, I mean, again, Instagram as well, and like Facebook, just a lesser extent, but it's still there. Twitter, I found like to be a very large podcasting like community. And so with that network, it's just it's a group of local podcasters in Vancouver. So it's more like even just like a co-op, like just a group of us kind of that are friends. I followed one of them on Twitter. I guess I just followed some local podcasts in Vancouver. I think that was the Radio One with Xanthia's back in the day. And they were like, oh, your show is awesome. I've stalked you back. Do you want to come on our show and talk about it? So we did the interview on that show, which I forget what it was called then. It was called something else then. Also I got invited to the Ups of Vancouver, which is also on the same network. So it's like, it's just a small, there's like 6-8 shows or something. Like, it's not a lot of us. But that one, I was like a connection that I made basically through Twitter. So things like that. And again, like local to your city. So like looking at other people doing the same things in your city, like probably connecting. Like there's a Facebook group that I'm also in for Vancouver podcasters where I commented and talked to things. Yeah, I don't know. I also just have a lot of me on the internet. So people just kind of stumble on my stuff every once in a while. And like,
so you just kind of lucked into a podcast network is what you're telling me.
For me, kind of, yes. But it's like not a huge one. I don't know, like Game Night on those huge ones, you probably have to, like iHeartRadio or whatever, you'd probably have to pitch to them. But that is like, it's similar to like movie stuff. Like you don't actually have to make the show you can actually send a pitch of a really good idea. Now you probably have to have like a really good idea, and it also has to have like, you'd probably want some notoriety yourself and some experience, for them to like, be like, you know, like you're just doing it out of nowhere. It's probably not going to go over well, but you know, pitching is how, a lot of that works. You probably know more. Are you studying marketing communications or something, right?
Not marketing. No.
No, not marketing. No communications. Which is, I don't know what that means. Is that media? Like
communications is very broad. So
yeah,
if you get a bachelor's in it, it's like you can do all this, like human resources or radio
or
public speaking. So it's endless. But what you do is, like I said, like while you're in college, you focus on an area and you get experience in that area. And then
that's cool. Is there like a university like radio station that you can use at all?
The one I'm at. So I started at a community college, so I didn't have to pay as much, and transferring later this year, next year. And there's a radio station there, but they sold the frequency of it. So it's like, it doesn't exist pretty much. Wow. It's like online. It's really
interesting
crap, but the university is like a NPR. Once I transfer, okay. Like they have like an NPR station, but you I don't even know if they let students do that. So
they sometimes do. I would definitely definitely look into that. I didn't do it. I wasn't into the radio stuff and the podcasting stuff until the very end of my degree, unfortunately. But I did actually, I still like did a couple like poetry interviews for the Slam Poetry Club, and I also briefly worked with this guy at SFU who he did like I recorded some ads for him actually, but he also had like a hour poetry or something that he did at SFU, which is another university here, and they have their own small radio stations. So like looking at that kind of stuff, like that's a good toe in the door kind of thing, and they'll often be open to having like someone with no experience coming in and be like, or like a little experience being like, hey, I want to start a thing. Like I think Xanthia, who does the Cape Cod radio, did originally have their show on one of the local radio stations, and then it became internet, or it did both or something. Like I'd look into those options for getting started. I'm not saying that I had something similar. I forget what I was thinking.
Perhaps I could get on the Vancouver podcast network. Just kidding.
You could join ours. Just move here. Come to Canada.
Can I be the international podcast?
I don't know.
Abroad?
I
mean,
I could talk to them.
Not
about
abroad.
I don't know if we've done that yet. I don't actually know. I haven't met everyone on the network because we kind of joined right before COVID happened. And so I've only met like a couple of them in person.
Yeah. So I have two more questions for you that I will standardly ask every guest at the end of the show. But before that, I find it so hard to believe that you're like, you had a, cause I like your dress is successful. Like I've seen some of the numbers that you post and it's like, oh, cool. That's awesome. But it's so weird to, are you taking a break personally? Like you don't feel like doing it right now?
For me, I was taking a step back from it to focus on the freelance writing that I'm doing. And so I'm kind of working on my own writing business and then also potentially launching a new show and kind of like working on like learning about other things. It's a lot of work as well together. And I think Allie kind of needed a bit of a push. I did a lot of the heavy lifting when I was on it. And I think I just didn't really have the time for it. And I could have probably rescheduled it to be like, I'll just be on it and then not do the editing or something. And like, we haven't been with COVID as well and stuff. We haven't really seen each other too much in person. And so that's where we would get a lot of our productive things done together.
Right.
Yeah. I'm still loosely involved. It was more like I needed to focus on other areas of my life. And we did it for like a year and a half, like almost 2 years now, but a year and a half when I had sort of been like, okay, I've come this far with it, but now I need to do some other things. And my goals were really, I want to learn how to make a podcast. And I do really like the show, but I think it's very it's more broad, and I wanted to do something hyper focused and work on that. And I still like it. I think it's a great show and a great topic. I really hope she keeps it up. But yeah, because we set up like one affiliate, but we have someone reach out to repeat interviewed on our show, and they're like, they want us to interview them. I'm like, what? It's doing well. There's definitely people step along, and people keep trying to sell us podcast services, and we're like, we're good. Like, they try to send us emails that are like, we'll edit your audio, and we're like, we do that already.
Yeah, or the transcription emails. Besides Board Game Bitch, what's next for you?
I have so many ideas. I mean, my God, what's next in everything? I can't even. I joke that like I can't turn my creativity off. Like, I just have to always be doing something. I have so many ideas for podcasts specifically. I would love to do one of them. I had thought of was like a book review podcast of like really bad ebooks, like, you know, like a dollar, like a free book, maybe not bad, but like ones that are, you know, self-published and you have no idea, and reading them and like talking about them and like finding our favorite quotes, like something with a fellow writer reader who like that, do something like that. I used to, one of my earliest freelancing writing gigs was writing like book reviews, but like really bad books. It was fun. Like typos and everything. And I was like, oh, Nelly. But I must've been reading like a rough draft or something. But yeah, so I would like to do something like that. I had another idea for like a poetry podcast, like interviewing poets. And then doing like specifically humor poets, because I do a lot of comedic poetry. Mm-hmm. That's always been my favorite. And so I would love to get a show where I just get like a fellow comedic poet, interview them. We read some of their poems, do a prompt together, read those after, and see how bad they are, good, like whatever. And just kind of talk about poetry. That was something I'd also love to do. I don't know. So those are like a few ideas. Don't take my ideas. Those are mine.
I'll try.
But yeah, those podcast-wise, those are definitely like things that are not in the works, but they're things I do eventually want to go and make more shows just for funsies. And I like doing interviews like this. Like, I've reached out to people and then also being reached out to. Sometimes they ghost me. I need to follow up with one of them. But but yeah. And then because I do the writing of the podcast stuff, people find my articles there and then send me emails being like, oh, your article was great. I really liked it. I'm like, cool, thanks. They're like, it was super helpful. Like, I'm so glad. I'm going to be working on a podcast newsletter that I'm going to be sending out with like just general tips for people, because I love podcasts, but I don't like bad podcasts. And I just want everyone to be able to do them a little bit better so that we can all enjoy it. Like, someone can have a great idea, but then their microphone's just like not great and like they're cutting out or something because their connection's not good. I'm like, you're so close. Like, I want you to do well. And so I want to do more of that.
I've had two female co-hosts, and the first one you've discussed already. The last one, I believe, had a nervous breakdown. I don't think it was because of me, but we can't be too sure. So I want to ask you, especially, you know, with that psychology degree, I want to ask you, what can I do to make my female co-host more comfortable?
That's an important question. And a lot of people would just be like, well, I'm just not going to include women and totally exclude them. So I like appreciate that you're trying to do better. I know that seems like a simple thing, but it really... I know that's a lot. I as you've seen in the film work, like, I'm in the mud with mostly men, or I'm playing board games with mostly men, you know. Mm-hmm. It can be hard to be the woman in the room when you're, you know, I am very honest and very okay with things being like whatever. I think a lot of people have more of a, just because again, society brings men and women up very differently, can be like more, I won't say sensitive because everyone's sensitive, but like more just kind of socially aware of things. So I think I would start with asking them what made them uncomfortable specifically. I've had actually, I was in a game, like this is a D&D game where I had a DM who, the game was a little uncomfortable, and not just for me being female, but also for like another player. And he was like, that was weird. You were uncomfortable, right? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. And I didn't even care to reach out because I'm like, whatever. Like, I just brush things off and I move on. Like, I'm not overly concerned as a person, not too easily offended. But he, I think he had reached out to the DM and made like a point of it. And then DM reached out to me, not like he had been outed me like, oh, so-and-so was uncomfortable, like some awkward drama or whatever. They're just like, oh, I think I heard some players were uncomfortable with the last game. What can I do differently? And so being the person to recognize that something uncomfortable happened and then reaching out to the person that you have made feel that way. And then that is like the start. Cause again, I can't give too broad advice of like, always do this for every single woman you talk to. Like, oh my God, that would be a nightmare. Cause everyone's different. And again, it's not just women, it's just anyone who's just got a different, sort of belief system or values that you don't even know that you're accidentally totally saying something that hurts them, right?
And it's supposed to be a very open-ended question because obviously you don't know everything that's happened or the details. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be an open-ended question that I just... as a staple plan on asking every podcast guest, just for no reason. There's no reason for it. It's just going to be there. And so what you said was basically communicate, which I asked the previous person I interviewed what I could do, and it was pretty much communicate. So we have a bit of a theme here. So that's exciting. So I will say thank you so much for being here. I had so much fun talking to you. And I'm going to hold you to promoting your new podcast on here. I think around December 20th, I'm going to send you a message and say, hey, what up?
Totally. Yeah, that would be super fun. Then it'll be like actually going live. And I would love to even just talk and hang out again. Like, this is super fun. Yeah. It's super interesting. I love just hanging out with other podcasters and like podcasts.
Yeah. And I'm a new podcaster too. I'm 21st episode. So this is 22nd, but yeah. So thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. It was lovely.
If you would like to learn more about Victoria or how to hire her, go ahead and head on over to her website at victoriafraser.ca. Victoria, FRASER.ca. Follow this woman on Twitter at Drunk Ukulele or on Instagram at drunk.ukulele. Check out her podcast, I Like Your Dress. She's taking a break, as you heard, for now, but she's on there. She's in several episodes. Go check it out. And be sure on December 25th to check out her new podcast that she's launching titled Board Game Bitch. Do not miss that. After the break, we're going to go ahead and promo our guest for next week. Stay tuned.
Raven hates Julie.
And for that reason, this episode is brought to you by Raven. Julie had it coming. Thank you, Raven, for being a friend of the main host of the show. Now back to the show.
Next week, our guest is none other than Vicky. And I might butcher this last name. It's either Lewis or Luis. I'm guessing it's Luis. Vicky Luis sounds about right. But can you blame me? I haven't met this person yet. I'm going to interview her. So she's like a self-improvement type person. So some of the things that she talks about is hacking that time, anxiety, not procrastinating, being productive, being a perfectionist, whether or not that's a good thing or not, being ambitious, having your own business. She's a life coach. She gives lots of life coaching advice. She has an accent, so I'm excited about that. Love a person with a good accent. And that's coming up next week, so don't miss it, because if you do, then you're not there. And when you're not there, you happen to be a square. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube, Am I Canceled? Twitter, Am I Canceled? Instagram, Am I Canceled? That's me. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. Another special thanks to Tori. And I will see you next week. Goodbye.
Well, that was an awful show. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week to find out if we're canceled. Until then, this has been Am I Canceled?